mention, my name is Scott Hall, and I want to thank you for allowing me to share my story of Jesus in my life with you. In prep for this talk, I wanted to come up with a theme, golf being an obvious one. I thought about it, and I want to make this a conversation. I don't want to talk at you. I'm going to talk with you. Okay, so I may pause. I'm a little bit of an emotional guy, so if I pause for a little longer, it's to connect myself and make sure I don't sound like a screeching cat. So just go with it. So I wanted to think about the theme of golf, and I started to think about caddies. And I want to tell you about the caddy that I've had in my life. A caddy being somebody that you build a relationship with, depend on, you seek confidence from, and you really hope that your caddy knows, of course, that you're about to play. And for much of my life, my caddy's been alcohol. So let me tell you about it. As mentioned, I've been married 26 years, been blessed with 3 kids. I live in Cyprus. I grew up in Galveston, like I mentioned. And maybe this is normal, but my memories of my childhood and home life are fragmented. They're short and sporadic. Like a sticky note, like a little notepad if you write little stick figures and you flip them through and make a little movie. That's how my memories are. But in every vignette of those memories, there was a little Easter egg of alcohol. In every single one, I can remember a little hint of alcohol being around. And I had an older, single, alcoholic mom with no rules, no boundaries. I remember different men coming over to the house often. And it seemed like she was chasing having a party lifestyle at the twilight of her life. My father was gone by the time I was 2, so I have no memories of him. And about the age of 14, I started asking questions about him, where he was, what he did, things I should know about my father. My mother told me he died of a heart attack. This was the first time I got drunk, which would lead me to a life of being an alcoholic. So probably like most of us, finishing high school, I wanted to escape Galveston and get my life started, so I went off to an expensive college in St. Louis. That lasted about a year when I returned home with tuition issues and discovered my mother had used my student loans to live off of. A major reason I had to come home was we were in extreme debt, nothing to show for it. And oddly, her health had deteriorated so badly. When I left, she was older, but she was healthy, prepared to live by herself. And now, within a year, she could barely survive on her own. So at the ripe age of 20, I became her caretaker, changing bed sheets and bed pans at the age of 20. Are you kidding me? I needed something to help me navigate this game of life. Other people I saw use alcohol. And this was the beginning of my relationship with my cat. Alcohol started to provide comfort for me. I could spin almost any crappy situation into a positive with the help of alcohol. It started to produce skewed results. For example, I was the night manager of the hotel down in Galveston, Moody Gardens Hotel. And I thought it was completely normal to drink after work, standing in line at the grocery store at 7 a.m. for a 12-pack of beer. I did that for a long while until I met Tara. I knew instantly she was the one, even though we had obvious different attitudes. My loose lifestyle, her much more conservative. We dated for a bit, and I couldn't scare her off with my antics. So after about a year, we got married and moved to Colorado. Tara knew I was a drinker, but she didn't know I was an alcoholic. And I was thinking maybe the new scenery would curb this acceleration of experiencing with alcohol. My habit, it didn't. My habit began to increase quickly and aggressively, noticeably. I would organize after-work events so I could drink. I began taking work trips just so I could party, thinking that it was free of charge, a company credit card. That was awesome, I thought. Tara would often ask me, why do you need more than 12 beers to watch sports? Football, but even curling? She didn't get it. 24 months in my lifestyle, into this lifestyle, and it's not what she wanted. One day she told me she was ready to move back home. And the idea of returning home again, this way, either separated or divorced, are you kidding me? There's no way. I'm starting to feel like a loser. I couldn't get my shit together. And thankfully, before moving to Colorado, I met a man named Gary. The man my sister would end up marrying. And Terry and Gary both had been praying for Terry and I for a long time, for me, even longer. And then one winter, they came up to go skiing. And in Gary, I saw a man that appeared to be different. He had a different way about him. His approach, he seemed connected. And within just a couple of days of being around him, I noticed that I was trying a lot harder at life than he was. He didn't panic. He didn't get angry. He didn't seem to yell. He was sober, and he was in control. He wasn't flailing at life like I was. I felt compelled to start asking spiritual questions. And one night, driving back from skiing, I finally ran out of questions, and he turns to me and he says, "Scott, it's just your will. That's what's holding you back from placing your faith in Christ and experiencing true relief." And I thought maybe he noticed how hard I was struggling. The next day, he and I were returning the rental van, and while driving back, my will was ready. I was ready to place my faith in Christ, and I pulled over to the side of the highway. Nowhere, Colorado. And I gave my life to Christ. I had come to accept and believe the Son of God came to earth as a man, was crucified on the cross for my sins, and rose to life from the grave, recorded as much as any other historical event, proof that he was resurrected from the dead. And in that moment, I recall a sense of being able to breathe. We returned home, and I told Tara what happened. I told her we were moving back home. We had no plan, no idea how to find a house in Houston, barely any money. So with bags in hand, we moved in with Terry and Gary. Gary and I started to meet in the Bible, which began to provide a basic understanding of God through Jesus Christ. After several months of living with them, we moved out on our own. I got a good job. Tara was able to be home with the kids, just like we wanted, on a smooth path for a while. I did not understand the word practice, and AI got it wrong. I thought my drinking was contained, but it was not. I began to rationalize my drinking. I would even plan it, schedule it. I thought I needed it to help me make decisions, or at least help me feel better about the decisions I was making. At that time, my captain's voice had become second nature. I was becoming lazy with my relationship with God, not making it a priority, putting other things first, activities, cookouts, bars, sporting events, anything that included alcohol. Always a time away from the family so I could drink without guilt. Golf. Even, and I would golf just to drink. This was the modus operandi for several years, a decade. The kids were getting older. And each phase was difficult. Struggle as I had no roadmap into parenting. Teen driving sex, I didn't know what I was doing with them, so I felt like I was parenting by the magic eight ball. They came very active in school, extracurricular activities, athletics every night, child sports on the weekend, intense focus on the grades, and all I could think about was how not to fail. I couldn't manage that sober. I wanted to be so present for my kids and ensure they had a completely different childhood than I did. And during all this meddling, I caused almost the same scenario for them. By now, I was stuck in the do loop of making every decision through the filter of the bottle. Everything was impacted. Finances, relationships, everything. I was drunk almost every day. And during this time, during this phase of 10 years, I discovered a divorce decree between my mother and my father. She had lied to me about his death for the better part of 3 years. And she died denying it. So with alcohol-fueled confidence, I wanted to find out if he was still alive. And he was. And I found him living in Louisiana. I called, stated my case. It was weird. He wouldn't come to the phone. He didn't talk. He didn't want to answer my questions. And I very quickly and unpreparedly came to the sober fact that he did not want to take responsibility. That was a really weird dynamic that I was finding him and thinking, this is how a man acts. A man acts. You think you can be prepared for rejection. Being anesthetized was my daily goal at this point. Going through a bottle of vodka a day, boom. I would stumble into bed at night, turning to my wife, and she would ask me, are you drunk again? And I would say, with the confidence of knowing the sky is blue, yes. I had become apathetic with my relationship with Jesus. There were signs between me and God. Alcohol made it difficult, impossible to have a relationship with them. Then about 3 years ago, I began having health issues due to drinking. I would always wait to the very last moment to go to the doctor because I was embarrassed. And you know it's bad when you go in and he comes out and he goes, well, I was on my way to hepatitis, cirrhosis, fatty liver, anything else. I was dying. That was enough to give me pause enough to find the closest liquor store on the way home. I couldn't deal with that, so. And now, about a week later, out of the blue, I received a Facebook message from an old friend in Colorado. I didn't tell anybody this was happening to me. Him and his family were the first people Tara and I met when we moved there. There was an instant connection with Tim. He helped us move in when we got there. We would babysit their infant daughter, go on picnics, just to good people. He had been in the hospital several weeks due to alcoholism. I have not talked with him in 5 years, but he reaches out to me. He had been in bad shape. He was confused as to how he got there. I told him everything that was happening with me. He was the first person I let in. We had committed to reconnect, get healthy. He died 3 days later. The case of beer hit him as hard. At 1:30 in the morning, a day later, I was at the ER on a stretcher. You see, addicts rarely hit rock bottom. It's always a moving target. You would think my arrest was rock bottom. You would think my son asking me why I drank so much was rock bottom. Abandoning my family on a holiday to go get drunk and leaving them alone. And having to lie to my kids about my arrest. When life brought me to a place of need, my prestige went out the window. But lying there alone, listening to that steady, melancholic beep of the machines, I had an understanding come over me. I didn't want to be like Tim. I didn't want to have alcoholism kill me. This was the third or fourth time being incapacitated at the hospital due to drinking for me. However, this time was different. Tara was not by my bedside, and she was not coming back. She told me she was staying home. And I was doing this to myself. I was choosing an easy way out. I had finally understood in that moment that alcohol had one ending for me. I had stopped to walk with God for so long. And I began to realize I couldn't complain enough. I couldn't get drunk enough. I couldn't meddle in my life enough. I couldn't do anything enough to prevent trouble from coming my way. And these are the cards I was dealt. I was dealt a single alcoholic mom. And Dad, those are the facts. I never dealt with the anger that I had over him. However, working through love and support with my family, I have come to forgive them. And I'm sure if you ask her, she didn't mean to be an alcoholic. She didn't mean to be an enemy. But I've forgiven them. And I used to think that it was a big spectacle that you had to forgive somebody, but it's not. It's personal. And just like their damage, I'm dealing with the damage I've done against the people that I love. And you know, for so long, I trusted the wrong cat. I thought the ease of my failures could be masked by drinking. And I didn't understand the personal relationship with Jesus Christ could do that for me. And it has. My anxiety was ruled me for so long that I forgot that it's okay to have failures. Don't get me wrong. Some days are very difficult. But I'll close with this. Philippians 4, 6, 7. He may laugh at me when he was writing this. But do not be anxious about anything. But in everything. By prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God will transcend your mind in the mind and through Jesus Christ. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate you.
For that powerful, painful, and encouraging message. Also want to thank you for reminding me and all of us here.